This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our week-long look on the 20th anniversary of the 2001 civil unrest in Cincinnati continues today with a discussion about policing and the reforms prompted by what happened here two decades ago. Since the 2001 civil unrest, changes to policing in Cincinnati have served as a national model. In 2002, the city of Cincinnati signed the collaborative agreement and declared community problem-oriented policing would be the strategy for police services in the city. The strategy shifted the focus to prevention. Cincinnati has seen a dramatic reduction in use of force and arrest over the past 20 years, which mirrors a national trend. And we're joined now by phone by Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. Chief Isaac, welcome back to our program.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for having me.
We're glad to have you back. And I do want to note that we did invite retired police chief Tom Stryker, who was the chief of police in 2001, to join us on Cincinnati Edition at some point this week. But despite multiple invitations, he was unable to join us due to scheduling conflicts. Chief Isaac, when you reflect on 20 years after the unrest in 2001, are there any images or a single image that tend to come to mind first?
You know, I just tell you the amount and the amazing work that has taken place in the past 20 years by members of our great Cincinnati community and also by so many inside the department that have also participated in this work.
After the civil unrest back in 2001, you were a member of the police department, of course, at that time. And you were tasked with overseeing use of force complaints, and that would be a pivotal role, particularly in that period of heightened awareness of such actions after the deaths of so many Black people at the hands of local police at that time. Can you talk about your work in that area and what you found?
So it's actually, you know, it transitioned some during from the beginning and through our DOJ oversight period. In 2001, I was actually a sergeant assigned to our internal investigation section. So I had some experience in seeing a number of the deaths that had occurred prior to 2001 and seeing the challenges and a lot of the flat-out outrage of members of the community that so many young Black men had died at the hands of the police. After 2001, I was actually a part of our use of force response team during the civil unrest in 2001. So I was tasked with responding to any citizen complaints or any reported use of force by our officers during the civil unrest. We took a number of complaints. We investigated a number of complaints and, you know, all through that process and following. You know, I reflect back on how, you know, following that, we went through 8 years of Department of Justice oversight, and I promoted several times during that period. And one of the things that I'm most proud about is in 2005, I was assigned as a captain to oversee our internal investigation section. And it was during that period that we came into compliance with all of the Department of Justice mandates on how use of force investigations, how internal investigation complaints would be investigated, and basically establishing and firming up our relationship with the now existing Citizen Complaint Authority. So something that I've always been very proud of as a part of that work.
We're talking with Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. Chief Isaac, you noted the feelings of the community in that period around 2001, and you did work on community relations. Can you describe what the relationship was like in 2001 between members of the community here, particularly the Black community and the police department?
You know, very tense. And, you know, there were a number of of community leaders that over that, during that period of time, had indicated that there was a lot of tension and the potential powder keg if these type of police use of force interactions occurred. And we saw that explode in 2001. And you know, I've been asked, you know, recently, what was the difference between 2001 and what we've seen in the past year in light of the death of George Floyd. Was very different in the sense that the anger that we felt was very specific here to Cincinnati. It was very targeted at the Cincinnati Police Department. When in the past year, we've seen an incident that happened 600 miles away, but yet you can still feel that same tension, that same anger here, and not just our city, but most cities throughout the country and many throughout the world. You know, I can say in my over 30 years of experience in law enforcement, I've never seen an incident ignite a worldwide protest.
And you're talking about the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis?
Correct. When in 2001, it was very specific to Cincinnati.
I'm wondering, Chief, when we spent last summer watching the protest that followed the deaths of George Floyd, also Breonna Taylor in Louisville, we remembered names from recent years, like Michael Brown in Ferguson, Tamir Rice in Cleveland, Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and those are just a few. From your perspective in law enforcement, what did you see as different, particularly with the death of George Floyd and the national response that it sparked, that was different from these other tragedies?
Well, you know, I think that one of the unique things about this is that I saw the law enforcement community share in that outrage and share in that anger. You know, it was very unique to talk to our officers that were out here on the front lines last year, and many, if not all of them, shared that same anger in what had occurred and that same outrage that a member of the law enforcement community would act in that fashion.
And we're talking with Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac here on Cincinnati Edition. So you were in a leadership role in the Cincinnati Police Department while the Department of Justice was working with the city and working towards what would be called the collaborative agreement, and even in the years after that. Can you give us an idea of what it was like being in the police department that was, in essence, being policed very closely by the federal government? Was this a challenge at all for you and for your officers?
You know, I think definitely. When you look prior to the early 2000s, police departments were really left on their own. There wasn't a lot of outside influence. Police departments acted in a fashion as to what they saw best. And you can imagine that there was some resistance on the part of law enforcement to resist some of that. But at the same time, there were a great many of officers who recognized and supported that something had to dramatically change. And it took that intervention on the part of the federal government to actually force change. Now I look back, and as I talk to colleagues around the country and hear and speak with others that enter this profession, those changes are and the desire to continue to grow is embraced by so many in the profession. And that is one thing that encourages me.
Chief, was there a particular period or moment where the shift took place within the department where most were just to the proposed reforms, or was it gradual along the way?
You know, I think it was somewhat of a gradual change. A lot of it did not happen overnight, but one of the things that as I reflect back and I think of much of the work that we do today really has its roots in what happened in those early years. You know, the when it comes to technology, when it comes to our commitment to transparency, our commitment to staying current with our training, not just in the physical activities, but also in the way we look at procedural justice and bias-based policing, the commitment to continue to evolve as new information and new understanding is available, that law enforcement now seeks that and embraces it.
We're talking with Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. Chief Isaac, I want to read just a very short piece of a very long profile about Cincinnati police reform that was published in The Atlantic 6 years ago. And this part reads, in quote, "But the lessons of Cincinnati are complicated. Success required not just the adoption of a new method of policing, but also sustained pressure from federal officials, active support by the mayor, and the participation of local communities. If Cincinnati is a model of reform, then it is equally a sobering reminder of how difficult it can be to change entrenched systems." Is that a characterization that you would agree with, Chief?
Absolutely. This work is not easy. It is not something that comes natural, but I think anything of value, anything worthwhile, is born out of struggle. And I think even today we continue to push to be better, to be the type of police department that our community desires and values.
Chief, some of the changes that emerged following the civil unrest of 2001 included that the police department would hold press conferences within 12 hours of any shooting that involved an officer in the department. There would be camera footage from the event released. Officers would be tracked if they received what was characterized as an inordinate number of complaints. We heard you reference the Citizen Complaint Authority, and that has subpoena powers over police, and so that's around. And the department adopted new use of force policies, changed guidelines on when to use chemical spray, and established a mental health response team to deal with incidents in which a suspect may have mental health problems. Those are characterizations from that same Atlantic article. Of those changes, what do you think has had the most significant impact on the relationship between the community and the police department?
You know, I don't know if there's one single thing, but I think at the root of it all is, you hit that word, it's relationship. Relationship is what is key, and our commitment to work in partnership with the community. I think the greatest thing that was probably born out of all of this work was our commitment to community problem-oriented policing, that we would work in partnership with the community to solve the problems in our neighborhood, something that we still do to this day. And one of the things that I think Cincinnati is most known for. There were so many other things that also helped facilitate this. You mentioned a number of those, our commitment to being transparent. I think that fosters a healthy relationship with the community. When we have an officer-involved shooting, you mentioned that commitment that we will provide as much information as accurately and as timely as possible. I am still amazed when I see police departments across the country that do not share that information, that they hold on to that information. You know, I look back and reflect on how big of a mistake that is, you know, when we have information about what occurred and we don't share it. It allows those wounds to fester and to boil over. it's been my experience that the community can accept when we make a mistake. They can accept when things go wrong. But what they can't accept is when they're being lied to and information is being withheld from them. That creates that tension and that anger that boils over.
Data from the department shows that use of force by Cincinnati police has decreased significantly. We've also seen general arrest also dramatically reduced. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Mungs. We continue now with our conversation with Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac as part of our week-long anniversary of the 2001 civil unrest here in Cincinnati. Chief, in 2020, last year, there were 345 use of force incidents. 75% of those involved black people. And the city is 43% black as it relates to population. Back in 2000, though, and that was the year before the police shooting and killing of Timothy Thomas, there were 1,266 use of force incidents, with roughly 68% involving black people. What's changed to see such a dramatic reduction, both in raw number of use of force incidents as well as the racial makeup of those who are on the receiving end of that?
Number of things. First and foremost, training. That really has a lot of the roots of teaching our officers, preparing our officers on how to de-escalate a situation, not to go hands-on. One of the things that we implemented after that was the use of a taser, a way to subdue someone that needed to be arrested without it turning into a violent confrontation. But one of the things that really I when I look back and reflect is the work that we've done and seeing the reduction in the uses of force. We see the reductions in our arrests. When you talk about or look at the arrest data, more than decreased by half. But the challenge that we still face, and as you mentioned, some of the disparities along racial lines, continues to be one of the challenges that we always have to examine when we look at arrests, traffic stops, uses of force. What we found is, and kind of the advice that we were given, not just us, but law enforcement as a whole, in the early 2000s, were to be a data-driven agency, to go where the data leads you. Make sure that you're following up on all of those things that would point to where you need to focus your energy as. And that is one of the things that I recognize that we did. But when you do that, one of the things you still find is those disparities still exist. That takes more work.
And I want to correct myself. When I was leading into this question, I said that the racial disparity drop. I was looking at the wrong percent. The city is 43% black as it relates to population, but 75% of the use of force incidents in 2020 were against black people. And that is actually up in terms of percent from 2000, when 68% of 1,266 use of force incidents were against black people. So the incidents have gone down in pure raw numbers, but it looks like the percentage of black people who are on the other side of the use of force incident has ticked up.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that we still see these disparities exist. And I think it requires us to peel that onion back further as to why that occurs. One of the things that we are doing and we've been doing is we need that academic partnership. We've engaged the University of Cincinnati to really help us develop this bias-free analytical framework, where we ask them to take a look at our arrests, traffic stops, and use of force. It's very complex data, and as to why that is leading us there, and help us to do even better at reducing those disparities. I believe that there are a lot of things that play into that. I think we need that guidance from academia to really help us improve in that area.
We're talking about race a lot, particularly as it relates to policing and police departments' relationships with their communities. Is it important for someone like you, a black man, as chief of the police department, to be visible in the community?
I think it's extremely important. And when I see these disparities exist, it absolutely hits home. It strikes me very deeply. The reason that I've entered this profession is to see law enforcement basically conducted in fair and equitable terms. I want to make sure that we, and why I have the ability to lead this agency, to make sure that our officers are policing in those fashions. But one of the things that I've learned, and I continue to see, that there are so many other factors that play into what brings law enforcement into our community. And I see how important it is that we address these issues from a holistic perspective. When we talk about those issues around poverty, we talk about things around education, employment, housing. You see equal disparities. We've experienced this worldwide pandemic, and we see the disparities in healthcare and the dissemination of healthcare. All of these things impact our communities of color the most. And I think it's critical that we try to approach this from a holistic perspective.
What do you talk about with young black people as it relates to law enforcement when they express concerns or worse, fears of encountering police?
You know, and that has kind of been one of the things that over the past year, since last May, I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of young people about this. And even during the civil unrest last year, I had the opportunity to speak with a lot of our college-age folks, a lot of our teenage young people. And one of the things that struck me most is that they weren't aware of a lot of the work that has been done here in Cincinnati and how some things have worked really well. And some of the things that they were asking for and wanted to see happen in law enforcement was already taking place here in this city. But at the root of that conversation is kind of what we talked about from the very beginning of our conversation. That relationship is key and it's critical. I think it's important that we develop those relationships with all facets of our community. And our young people are most critical. And continue our efforts in growing those relationships.
Chief, we're referring to the events of 2001 here at WVXU, a civil unrest. It has been characterized elsewhere as riots. You also refer to it as civil unrest, not riots. Would you explain?
You know, when you see something that has valid roots to it, and it spills over. And make no mistake, there were some people who were rioters. There were others that were there for other reasons. And things and their anger and temper just overflowed. I think rioters are there to loot and to steal and to just wreak unnecessary havoc. Those that are engaged in civil unrest are expressing their anger and their outrage, and it just overflows. My perspective.
As we reflect again on 20 years after the civil unrest that took place here in Cincinnati, in 2001 and you look ahead, what change do you see as most pressing as it relates to the police department?
We have to find a way as law enforcement as a whole to be more consistent in the way we deliver police service. One of the things that I think is the greatest challenge is just the disparity in the way our officers are trained, the way our departments are equipped, the way our departments have policies and procedures in place, and probably the most important piece is how are we holding our officers accountable for the work that they do. I see, many departments that they may have good training and good equipment, but their policies and their ability to hold those officers accountable are what is lacking. We need to find a way to be more consistent. I think that if you're a citizen, and whether you're in the city of Cincinnati or you're in one of our neighboring suburban communities, you can have the expectation that whatever officer you encounter has been trained the same way, he has the same policies and procedures that he'll follow, and that if things aren't that way, you can have an expectation on how it will be dealt with. And right now, I don't believe that consistency exists.
Elliot Isaac is the chief of police in the city of Cincinnati and has been our guest. Chief Isaac, you've been very generous with your time. We appreciate it, and we hope to talk again soon.
Well, thank you so much. And, I'm very happy to have this conversation. It's hard for me to believe that this has been 20 years. I am just amazed at the hard work that has taken place, and I am still so very proud of this department, the work that has been done, and I'm amazed at the great work that our brave men and women do every day to be the type of police department that our citizens deserve. So thank you so much, Michael, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chief. We do appreciate it as well. Up next, we'll talk with a Black Cincinnati police officer from the Sentinel Police Association. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. This nation has spent the past year grappling with racism and policing and policies and actions that have left numerous Black people dead at the hands of law enforcement. The Sentinel Police Association in Cincinnati is an organization of Black police officers. To talk with us about being Black and an officer, we're joined via Zoom by Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden. Lieutenant Gladden, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. And I believe we also have with us former Sentinels president and Cincinnati Police Specialist Scotty Johnson. Specialist Johnson, are you with us on the phone?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me?
I sure can. I'm glad. I think we got you just in the nick of time. We were having some troubles connecting,
sir.
But I'm glad that you could spend some time with us today. I know that you had some scheduling issues, and we're glad to have you. I was hoping, Specialist Johnson, that you could give our listeners an idea of what the Sentinels is as an organization.
Well, the Sentinels were formed in 1968, and we addressed three major issues in 68 and still addressing, unfortunately, in 2021, hiring practices, promotions, and job assignments. And the organization was formed because in 68, there was a great disparity, a much bigger disparity than now. When it came to those arenas, hiring, job assignments, and promotion. So the Sentinel Police Association was formed to address those three major areas. And then over the years, discipline became an issue also. So the Sentinels were an advocate for black police officers to make sure fair and equitable treatment was being dispersed throughout the police department.
And what are you finding today in the police department as it relates to black officers and promotions and opportunities and discipline?
I can say the city of Cincinnati and the police department has come a long way. It is much better now than it was in 68. Of course, no system on this planet is perfect. So I think with the continuous work and continuous push for equality and continuously demanding that all things be equal, I think we are in a position now where things can, if we continue to stay focused and committed, things can continue to get a lot better.
That is Cincinnati Police Specialist Scotty Johnson, who is also a former president of the Sentinels, the black police organization in the city of Cincinnati. We're also joined by Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden. Lieutenant Gladden, I know we're going to talk a little bit about 2001 and since we are reflecting on 20 years since the civil unrest in Cincinnati, but could you talk to us a little bit about being a black man who joined the ranks of the police department, is something that a lot of black people would probably struggle with because of their experiences with law enforcement?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. And you're right, we do struggle to find minority officers or to recruit minority officers, not just in Cincinnati, but I think that's the occupation across the nation. Being one myself, I can tell you that it's a very rewarding job. It's something that I wouldn't change a thing. And at times, yeah, you're right. There's an internal struggle you go through because not only are you a police officer, but again, I'm a black man. So a lot of the social issues, community issues that we face and we're forced to deal with, we have to live it from both sides.
Lieutenant, when did you know you wanted to be a police officer?
Well, it's not really something that I grew up, dreaming that I'd be. It came about as I was working at a downtown hotel as security with a group of people, and we had a fairly decent relationship with the Cincinnati Police Department. Some of their officers would stop by the office and write out some of their reports and things like that. Lo and behold, they were given a test. And some of the guys I worked with decided or had signed up and decided they were going to take the test and invited me to come along. And I really, at that time, really wasn't all that interested. I had my mind set on other things that I was going to do in life. But I'll be honest, the starting pay, when they told me what it was, kind of piqued my interest. And I said, okay, let's go take this test. And we did. And as luck would have it, I'm the only one out of the group that made it through.
Oh, my goodness. Specialist Johnson, let me ask you a similar line of questioning first. Share your thoughts on, the relationship between police historically, currently, and the black community and how you see it.
Well, historically, unfortunately, it has been a really, those relationships have been really horrible because based on the creation of law enforcement in America, it was created basically to keep groups separate. And if you think about in the 1800s, it was definitely created to make sure black people stayed in their lane and stayed away from societal people, which back then was probably all white people. But over the years, it appears that America is attempting, and I use the term attempting, to make strides to try to rectify those relationships. But the only way those relationships get rectified is through mutual respect and mutual understanding. So over the years, I think, of course, having served in law enforcement for 33 years, you have to get involved in it if you want to see change. And you don't, it's difficult to change from the outside, to make change from the outside. So being a part of it, serving the citizens for 33 years and making a difference, making sure that everybody we encounter, whether black or white, was respected. Everybody we encountered got fair and equitable treatment. That was a start. But over the years, because of incidents like George Floyd, Tamir Rice, America's policing has taken some steps back because there isn't clear communication in all communities. There isn't fair treatment in all communities. So until we arrive at some point where people feel as though they're respected and they feel as though they're being treated equally, we're going to continue to have that divide. But I think people like Lieutenant Gladden that are there, Chief Elliott and Isaac that are still there, those guys that remain, that know how far we've come in Cincinnati, they'll make sure that we, as the Cincinnati Police Department, continue to move toward making sure everybody's treated fair and equitably.
Specialist Johnson, you mentioned some of the victims of tragedies that have garnered nationwide attention and outrage in recent years. And I'm wondering if you could share with us some of your feelings that you experience when you see something like what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis, and then you see the response to it even in our own community with more protests, more civil unrest even. What type of feelings do you experience as a black person who wears the uniform?
Well, sickening. I mean, there's no other term. It was absolutely what happened in Minneapolis was sickening. There's no justification for it. Honestly, it's extreme. The first time I was able to watch it all the way through was probably about a week ago, because there's that type of behavior, that type of heinous disrespect for another human being is not anything that I've ever trained with. And I know Minneapolis and Cincinnati are different. I was a member of the SWAT team for 25 years, we never, ever saw another human being get treated like that. But it's beyond, if there's another term, beyond sickening, I would use that. And all his colleagues that stood around and watched it deserve penitentiary time. So those are things where you say, unfortunately, that Chauvin, I believe his name is, they wear a badge and they wear a uniform to uphold the law, but they are absolutely no part of any brotherhood that I ever wanted to be associated with.
That's Specialist Scotty Johnson of the Cincinnati Police Department, a former president of the Sentinels, the Black Police Officer Organization. We're also joined via Zoom by Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden. Lieutenant Gladden, you were working on the City Hall detail back in 2001 when the civil unrest was taking place in Cincinnati in response to a police-involved killing here involving 19-year-old Timothy Thomas. Can you share some of the personal feelings that you were dealing with there when you saw the response from black people and the response from the police department? And you, by your very nature, represent both.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Mentioned, I was at the time I was a sergeant, and my assignment was down at City Hall. We had a safety department at the time. I was the City Hall liaison officer, and part of my duties and responsibilities were to provide a security presence at all the committee meetings and the council meetings, in which I sat in back in the corner and just kind of kept an eye on things and made sure, you know, that nothing out of the ordinary was going on. But at this particular meeting, I believe it was a Law and Public Safety Committee meeting, and it was really heated because a large number of citizens had come into the chambers, and of course they were angry over the Timothy Thomas shooting, and they were demanding answers that they felt just they weren't getting. And at one point, I remember someone stating, "Lock the door. We're not letting anybody leave until we get the answers we're looking for." They were standing on tables. They were standing in the windowsill in the council chambers. And to be quite frank, we effectively had lost control of that meeting. And I know the police chief at the time, Tom Stryker, he was there. And we had several other officers in the room, none in uniform. All of us were in civilian attire. But I recall at one point, there's this picture that the Cincinnati Inquirer posted in their paper. And I'm in the photo, and there's an angry young man pointing his finger at the chief, at Tom Stryker, as he's sitting at the table giving testimony. And I remember that moment as he was approaching, kept walking closer and closer to the chief and pointing his finger in his face or towards his face. I remember thinking to myself, man, if he accidentally pokes the chief, because I don't think he was going to intentionally do anything to him. I just didn't have that feeling. But I thought if he accidentally pokes him in the face or touches him, then I'm pretty sure we're probably going to have to arrest him. And then, that would just further aggravate a situation that was already well out of control. So what I tried to do was position myself to be in between them, hoping that if anybody got poked, it would have been me. And then, no harm, no foul. But lucky for us that it just didn't happen. But yeah, that was a pretty scary moment, to say the least.
Lieutenant Gladden, that's a pretty literal and emotional image that you describe. I'm wondering if you somehow play that role still when we watch, what unfolded last summer, even here in Cincinnati, with more protests against police violence. Do you see yourself as sort of standing between those activists calling for reform and the police department? I shouldn't even say standing in between, but maybe as a bridge.
I would say as much as I can, and but what's extremely unique about the way we handle business now and the way we conducted business then is that a lot of that anger that was demonstrated at that meeting was a direct result of a lack of communication, a lack of us being able to, at the time, put out the information. One of the primary ways we would deal with investigations back then is we gather the facts, we investigate the crime, and we keep everything within that group, within that. Only the people that's involved in that investigation need to know what's going on, and certain facts we just couldn't put out. Even with the media, we would say, hey, that's under investigation. We can't talk about it. And as you know, that got to be a problem because it fostered, I guess, a distrust of the police. Because if you don't know, then you're forced to listen to whatever comes out in the rumor mill or whatever people are saying in the streets. And the more it's said, let's face it, perception is reality. What's ever said in the out in the streets, if you ain't getting the other side of or getting any facts, well, then you're going to take that as fact. So, I think we've come a long way. We do a good job now of whenever there's a critical incident that jumps off, we get the facts out as quickly as we can. Generally, you notice if you live in the Cincinnati area, you notice usually there's a press conference within 24 hours of giving out the preliminary information or facts of the investigation as quickly as they can. And they usually involve our senior commanders, either police chief or assistant chiefs or some of our captains. But I think that has helped us in so many ways with our relationship with the community, because and all that was, I think, a direct result of what took place in 2001.
That's Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden. We're also joined by Cincinnati Police Specialist Scotty Johnson. Specialist Johnson, what do you see as your role or responsibility, if any, in navigating the relationship between the Cincinnati Police Department and the Black community?
More than anything, the Sentinel Police Association, along with a number of officers, both Black and white, bridge building is the key, to be bridge builders. We have spent way too much time separate in believing that law enforcement or the experts in the community just needs to take what law enforcement puts out. I believe the role of law enforcement should be bridge building. And that's something that the Sentinel Police Association, and that's something that we've tried to do since our inception, building bridges so there is clear communication, so there is clear understanding as to why police do what they do. You alluded to it, and I believe the chief and Lieutenant Gladden alluded to it, that years ago, it may take 2 to 3 months before any questions are answered about an incident. Now, within 24 hours, you're getting preliminary information, and you're getting, and the police are able to interact and tell what transpired. We may not have all the facts, but at least the community is getting some information. So we have to continue to be bridge builders, and we have to be empathetic and compassionate as to how the community feels when they feel as though they've been mistreated. And a lot of times they have been mistreated, but we in law enforcement have to bring a true level of compassion and understanding as to why the community feels the way they feel.
Specialist Johnson, I've got less than a minute left. We heard Lieutenant Gladden tell his story. He was working security in a hotel when a group of, I think, fellow security officers enticed him to go take the test to become a police officer, and he's been one ever since. What's your pitch to young Black people about possibly pursuing a career in law enforcement?
It's super rewarding. I mean, super rewarding profession, a very difficult profession. Very difficult profession, but you are able to be rewarded as a result of serving the citizens. I would say if you want to see a difference, you be the difference, get involved, and come help Cincinnati become the greatest police department on the planet.
That's Cincinnati Police Specialist Scotty Johnson, a former president of the Sentinels. And we've also been joined by Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden. Specialist Johnson, Lieutenant Gladden, thanks to both of you for sharing the time and your perspective with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.
Coming up later this week, on Friday, we'll be talking with former Cincinnati Fraternal Order of Police President Keith Fangman as our week-long recollection of the events of 2001 in Cincinnati continues. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. More episodes online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk tomorrow.